look at the analyses you sent.
Okay.
And then and see what we can interpret out of them. So that last night, which tells you how organized I've been in the past 2 weeks, last night I printed everything out, and I started to look at it last night.
Hey, you're miles ahead of me.
Okay, so what I did then, so this is in an email from March 2nd that I sent you all, was this CMH test.
Oh.
Which, first of all, I did in Minitab.
Schmickies.
And didn't do any really fun coding at all to get this and just let the software do it.
March 2nd.
So the first thing I did was I actually cheated to create the data sets. So in the email you have how I kind of created the data sets. Like there's like three of the Excel files attached.
Yes.
I just made sure we had the right number of counts of the different combinations in it. So when I answer Tara's email, I didn't even use the data she sent. This is all I used, was this.
Yeah, I did look at the Excel file. So basically, you just went through, and so for the luggage, our table said that 5 out of 23 people had a, I guess, randoms first. But, like, 5 out of 23 people had a bias scenario where their strengths was agree. And so you just went through and then created 5 yeses and 18 noes for those appropriate variable combinations, bias agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Just an explanation. I could look at the table to make sure that I was having the right things show up.
Yep, and I went through and double-checked the counts as well just to make sure I understood where all the numbers were coming from, and I saw everything lining up there, too.
Okay.
That's where I went totally against trying to figure out how to use the Excel file she already had. I just created my own. It was easier.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the nice little drag option in Excel is very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes brute force is easier than figuring out the elegant programming solution.
I have always been the person that, as long as it works, I didn't really care what I had to do to get there. It might not have been the most elegant, but I got there. So then when I was looking at them, there was really only the one p-value that was really significant.
Although one of them does approach significant.
Yeah, the one was close as well.
Yeah, you have the point for the luggage, you have the 0.09, which we can say, I mean, technically, that's significant at the 10% level. It's just no one ever considers the 10% level outside of a classroom. But we could say it approaches significance at the level. Or I noticed the phraseology Joan Garfield uses in some of her stuff is that that's moderate evidence of significance when it's between 5 and 10, when the p-value is between 5 and 10. So we could use some sort of phrase like that. Tuition, there really didn't seem to be anything going on. I mean, the p-value is almost at 1. The odds ratio itself is almost at 1. So can you help me? Can we go back to the luggage table real quick?
Sure.
Because I haven't worked with odds ratios. God, I'm not sure ever, like, really sat down and, like, studied them or interpreted them. So can you guys help me with the interpretation of the odds ratio here, the 0.47?
Oh,
because it basically, odds ratio, my understanding is an odds ratio of 1 indicates kind of no difference or no effect. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So the fact that we have an odds ratio that is less than 1 indicates there's something going on here. But how is this odds ratio actually constructed? Like, what's our numerator? What's our denominator?
Okay, I believe for these, which is, again, I'm not exactly always sure what Minitab is doing. I could look it up, of course. As I believe what they're doing is they're taking, even though right now they're broken up into multiple 2x2 tables, it's doing a Commons odds ratio, and I believe that means they're actually combining them all into one table. We'll have to look up that, if I'm not positive.
Okay, hold on. Let me see if I can. Odds ratio.
There we go.
Estimate of odds of.
Common
odds ratio. The odds of failure. Divided by the odds of failure. Okay, this is just an example. This isn't going to help me.
Yeah, it does a summing over the, for us here, the three individual tables. basically create some ratios. So it almost looks like it's a weighted average odds ratio, for lack of a better way of saying it.
Okay. Now,
I believe here it would be the, these are the top one over the bottom one. So it looks like it would be biased no to the random yes.
Now, do these p-values, do they let us know if there's a difference? Because I think what we're looking for something that lets us know if there's a difference across both the row and the column dimensions, right? Or is this looking at either rows or columns? Because we had talked about both of those things.
And so what this, the MHC here is testing is it says the null hypothesis that X and Y are conditionally independent given Z.
Sorry, can you say that again?
So we're trying to see if given, like, agree, disagree, neutral, if the bias in random is independent of the no yet.
So given, let's say they're in the neutral category.
Really how I guess I'm thinking about this is they're trying to see if our sampling method and context are independent given a certain belief, to use our wording. So in a sense, I think what we're kind of really testing here is to see if opinion is having a difference.
Sampling method and context.
So if a p-value were significant, then that indicates that they are not independent, that they are, in fact, that there's some sort of relationship between their sample type and whether or not they were likely to use context for their particular opinion conclusion combo. Because agree, again, here is strong opinion conclusion agrees, right? That it, in and of itself is already two things brought together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I believe what we're really, kind of like what this test would allow us to do if it was not significant, I believe that says that we are allowed to collapse across opinion.
Okay.
And because, I mean, this test that we were doing is for a 2 by 2 by K table. So our K here has to be the agree, disagree, neutral, because it's more than 2.
Mm-hmm. all right, so that lets us know if we can collapse. And for us, the opinion was the row dimension. So this lets us know we can collapse across rows. Then, if we collapse across rows, we just have a single 2x2 table, where then we could decide if we need to collapse across sampling type as well. So it would seem to me for the tuition table, certainly, and possibly also for the luggage table, we could run a follow-up test to see if we could collapse across sampling type. I think, do you agree that that's where we should go from here?
And, of course, the 2x2 table would be much easier to figure out if we can collapse across.
Yeah.
Right. Couldn't you even use the same test? Like, don't they have a 2x2 version? Or
well, that would just be a chi-square test.
I was going to say, isn't that just a chi-square test?
At this point.
Do we, yeah, we got enough cell things if we collapse?
Yeah, I think once we collapse across the... Once we collapse across the rows,
I'm sorry, I feel really stupid. I'm listening and I'm totally following this, and I feel really stupid because I can't find Jackie's file.
Oh, okay. I'll forward it to you.
All right, thank you.
So do you think we can, we know we can collapse across the middle one, the tuition one, no issues. Do you want to go ahead and collapse across the luggage one, or do you think we should... Since that one, in a sense, has some significance, do we want to worry about it?
I don't know. If we want to take 5%, leave that as a hard cutoff, then we can collapse in that case. And run the follow-up test.
Okay. Well, at least put that down as a question mark. Do you run that one anyway just so we can see the results?
I think so, because I think it would be... I think it would be reasonable to say we were using a 5% significance level, and so this is insignificant at 5%. I mean, and we can actually, I think, put it that way in our write-up and say, you know, well, it was significant at the 10% level, but we were considering 5, so we went ahead and collapsed across this dimension. So I think we would want to run follow-ups for both luggage and tuition. Mac PC, it looks like we need to keep it the way it is. Now, this may seem like an ignorant question, but I guess we can't kind of flip these, can we? Like, we can't run it to see... Like, could we have started with biased versus random and tried to collapse across that first?
And not then with this test.
At opinion, not with this test. Is there another test that would have let us?
Probably. I don't know of one off the top of my head, because this one is only, like, for the 2x2x K, and I haven't seen one that I remember that's an extension of that.
All right, so this is the best we can do right here. So we'll start with strength of opinion, collapse across that in a couple cases. And then it looks like Max PC, we actually have something to talk about in the results where we can say that actually there does appear to be a difference here. Based on the use of context. So here the odds ratio is, so if you go to the Mac PC table, which Lee, I did forward that to you, so hopefully
okay.
It came through.
I'm waiting.
So if we're right that the ratio is biased no over random yes, and the odds ratio is greater than 1, is 2, that means you were more likely to use context.
I'll get one of them just so I can make sure I interpret this right for you all.
Yeah.
All right, so like the agree little 2x2 table. The odds ratio for that one is about 2.28.
Just for the agree table.
Which means
table.
That the odds of not including context was actually higher in the biased scenarios than in the random scenarios.
The odds of not including context. So you're less likely to use context in the bias scenario.
Which is actually weird.
Yeah.
Wait. Say that again. The
odds of using let's actually do it with context. That might be easier. The odds of using context in a random scenario are 2.28 times larger than using it in a biased scenario.
Okay, because it's yeah, it's four over against. The odds ratio is always four over against. So.
So, I mean, that overall, the common odds ratio you're seeing is the combination of the three tables all together.
Mm-hmm.
So what that test being significant actually means is that the odd ratio is between those three tables is actually significantly different.
Okay.
When it comes to interpreting, do we need to interpret for the significant, where the test for all of them is significant, should we report the odds ratio for each row, for each opinion?
If it's significant, yes.
Okay. So you're more likely to use context in a random scenario, at least when the opinion agrees with you. Is that what we just said?
Mm-hmm.
What about disagree? Do you have those two? And this is all max.
And it's up to us. I mean, technically this test tests for odds ratios. Now, if when we actually do our discussion part, if you want to do it in terms of relative risk, we can. I mean, again, I don't know how much people understand an odds ratio interpretation.
I clearly do not.
I'm hanging on by a string here, so I understood relative risk myself better.
Yeah, let's... My only concern is... if people are going to assume then that the p-value goes with the relative risk when the p-value is actually with the odds ratio. We might just have to be careful about how we say that. Say, you know, running a CMH test found significant differences between strength and opinion and sample type. Then, you know, and we can put the p-value there and then say something like, in fact, the relative risk was calculated to be blah, 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 and maybe that's where we can include kind of the confidence intervals for the relative risk, because we've already done that, and I like that idea, and that will make it easier to interpret. I just want to make sure it doesn't look like we're putting the p-value with the relative risk when, in fact, the p-value goes with the odds ratio, because a savvy reviewer might pick that up and think we either don't know what we're doing or we're trying to pull one over on them, neither of which I think would be good for us. But I think if we're careful in the write-up, we can make it clear the p-value goes with the CMH test for the odds ratio. Then we calculated when we found it was significant, we calculated the relative risk for each part, and this is interpretable. This is what we can do. So, Jackie, would you be able to create the relative risk? So would we need three relative risks, one for each of the opinions?
For the ones that we kind of collapsed across, yeah.
Right. Okay. So would you be able to create the relative risk for MAC-PC?
Yes.
And then run the follow-up tests for luggage and tuition, where we see if we can collapse across sample type?
Collapse across what?
Collapse across sample type, bias versus random.
Okay.
All right. Well, this is good. This is actually slightly more encouraging than I thought.
I'm trying to do a quick one. So the first one has an odds ratio of 2.2. The second one is 3.08. And the last one, real quick, is only 1.45.
And that was odds ratios for the MAC-PC data?
Yes.
Okay.
So, yes, they are very different. I can easily see why they rejected there.
But they're all greater than one, which, if we're interpreting that correctly, would interpret, well, I guess we discussed it's difficult to interpret an odds ratio. So I guess I do want to see the relative risk. I feel like I can understand that.
When I taught my class last year, I was like, people will do odds ratios, a lot of tests do them, but most people do not understand them.
Yeah.
I mean, for the tuition one, I'm not sure how much the small yes sample sizes played a role in things, but usually you get a warning if you shouldn't be using the test. So, mean, the chi-square test for independence won't take me very long.
Okay.
The relative risk stuff will take me a little bit longer because I need to do that in R, and I have to program it. I haven't found a single software yet that has a confidence interval for relative risk. So I usually end up doing it by hand.
Interesting.
Yeah, that actually is kind of interesting. But it's good that you can do that. I like that. I feel like I should point out to if I taught relative risk, you're like, this is a good reason why you need to know all these formulas and understand all of this stuff. All right, so I feel like that gives us a good sense of where we're going with the results for the percent of contacts. I feel like we can talk about those in a sophisticated and informed way now. And we know what we need to do for follow-up tests, and then once we get the data as the follow-up, or once we get the test as the follow-up, I can start to I can start to update the discussion appropriately. I don't think we'll include any of the actual output in there, so it'll just be discussion, boiling down a discussion, so I can take care of that once Jackie runs it. The other thing that I was looking, well, before I move off and switch gears, does anyone else have any questions, comments, concerns about the tables that Jackie sent and what Jackie's doing?
Well, I actually just have a quick question.
Oh, hey.
The tables 5, 6, and 7, are we going to leave them still in the paper as is and then just talk about the test and the discussion part? That way people still have, like, our raw results?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so.
Like, in the discussion, we can just talk about, okay, looking at table 5, here's what we found or something.
Yes. And say, you know, we can talk about this is what we saw, this is the test we ran, the results, and so on. So, yeah.
Okay.
Jackie? I just did a Google search, and somewhere buried in something I found using R to calculate relative risk, and they give you a confidence interval. There's a bunch of code in here. Is that helpful to you at all?
I will look. I mean, I already have some R stuff hard program that I can use, but
oh, okay.
I'll look.
Okay.
I know it was sad for my undergrad class. I had to use R because I couldn't find, like, Minitab didn't do it. SAST, and I couldn't find it even in SAST to do it. And StatCrunch didn't do it. SPSS didn't do it. Fun.
All right. Any other questions or comments on this?
I don't think so.
All right. The other thing that I started to look at, and this is what I didn't get a chance to look at in full because I started to run out of brain power yesterday, but I started to look at the actual coding results by school, and there's a lot of them. Does everyone have, so this is from a PowerPoint that Tara sent out a while ago, either results or I think it was actually called like results by school PowerPoint.
Tara sent it?
Yes.
That's cool.
I don't know when, so I'm trying to look back and see.
Got paper. Oh, yeah, I don't think I have anything.
Let's see if I can find it.
Okay, is it this July 19th email?
Yeah, I just found something. I just sent it both to you, which is based on what I had downloaded from an email from Tara, so that should be. It says results by school two because I apparently downloaded it twice. So I just sent that through to you.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe it's my mail download.
Damn it.
Yeah, it looks like it's slightly different than the one I had.
What was the sample size for Tara's school again?
Hers was 33.
All right. So did either of you find the file or get the file that I sent?
I haven't.
Okay.
Yep, there we go.
So scrolling down to look at the coding, I started with coding results for luggage scenario. So just looking at these, there do seem to me to be differences by school in terms of the types of codes they're including, just even for the luggage. I haven't actually looked at the other ones in a little bit more detail. And then I guess the question is, how would it be interesting to, like, what would be interesting dimensions to summarize? I mean, to me, there's clearly a difference between the frequencies and the types of codes that are being included. Do we sort of look at... who included more either incorrect responses, like kind of summarize across the P dimension, as well as the extra, the superfluous information dimension, or who included just longer responses, kind of an M versus a U sort of thing, which was kind of what I had done just looking at the overall tables. What do you think would be useful to summarize here?
I'm not sure how much detail we should go in with this for a couple of different reasons. I mean, with the luggage one, I wouldn't be as worried because we really did all code that one, but I wouldn't want, but there might be a possible issue with the other questions, but then they think that we're not interrelated or reliable, or would they actually think that there's a difference in school?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, and I did think of that last night, too.
And I mean, that my other concern is, I mean, you're the only one that had a really big sample size. I mean, for me, even with having 60-some students, but you break them down into all these different combinations, I don't know how big of a sample each of these things has.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, for example, I'm looking at my NKU results. This is slide 11. And either I'm losing my mind or something. So the upper left hand, I have 5 reasoning codes there that add up to 120% of my responses.
I'm sorry, which scenario is this?
The luggage.
So the luggage NKU... Oh, you're right. No, wait. I'm looking around 40, 60, 80. That's 100. The luggage scenario for NKU, upper left. It would help if I knew the difference between the left and the right. Crap.
It's really okay.
Yeah, so the right side adds. I just checked that. But I see what you're saying about the left because there's an extra 20 there. Interesting.
Although right now I am not sure what these percents, how they work. I mean, I would assume that, like, my 40% should have said, okay, here's the number of students that had this code over the total number of students who had a strong opinion, which the study agreed with random sampling.
Right. I would agree that that's how that should be calculated.
Why I'm in correlation with percent in probably July, why I'm just now noticing that it adds up to more than 100%, I don't know. But beyond that issue, I'm just not sure how big each of those cell counts are.
Right. And that's definitely an issue that you can see.
And yours and I's have the biggest, you know, cell count. So that's why I'm like, even if we're quickly seeing percentage difference, how much of it is a sample size effect?
Yeah, I'm wondering too. I mean, some of the things that were striking to me is, you know, when you go to Tara's, which Tara did not have, she didn't have a huge sample, but she didn't have a really tiny one either. And for the luggage code, I mean, where when the conclusion disagreed, she's seeing 100% of her codes in. Yeah, but I guess you're right. We don't know how many are there because they're actually, the sample sizes here are going to be much smaller than the overall sample sizes, even.
Even just looking at, you know, the individual cells here, there's six different categories a student could fall in with just agreement sampling method.
And based on, you know, going back to the table about the irrelevant context, that has the sample size of people that fall into these categories. Oh, yeah, so she only has a single student in this category. So that's why you're seeing 100% there. Yeah, I think you're right. I think the sample sizes here are really too small to do much of anything with. Sorry. So then, the question becomes, how do we handle that in the write-up? So right now, one of the key places we mentioned, or there's two spots in the paper where the idea of looking at schools by looking at results by school comes into play. One is explicitly in the limitations of the study design. One of the things I said is that we did the test collection the way we did because we wanted the biggest sample size from each school. I'm sorry, I don't actually have any water in my office right now, so I'm choking. We wanted the biggest sample size from each school so that we could compare results across school. So we could just say, we could either sort of delete that part, or I guess at some point we just have to say that we did look at results across school, but by that point the sample sizes were still very small. And we couldn't really make any sense of them. The other place where this issue kind of comes up is a little more implicit, where we just are talking about, in the beginning, when we're talking about the diversity of the institutions, it would then kind of bring up the question of, well, did you actually see diverse results across institutions?
So we could just make a note in the results section, you know, saying that, you know, one would like to be able to look at the results across schools to see how different they are. You know, unfortunately, due to kind of too small of cell counts, no test would really be powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. So I think we leave it in there because it was one of the things we had kind of talked about when we were going through as one of the, you know, kind of interesting things in our design was that we were at such different places and would that actually lead to different results. But I agree. I think we just have to say ultimately our sample sizes were too small to really be able to.
The only thing I think we could do across school if the sample size would be big enough is just looking at percent of students that used context, like regardless of sampling method or something. Because then sample sizes might at least be big enough.
Right.
But I don't know if we can break it. I don't think we can break it down into individual codes.
Okay. So you would actually collapse across sampling method there, too?
Depending on how big our sample sizes would be. I mean, we might be able to look at the random versus biased as well. I'm not sure where. I mean, I think, like, for our two schools, we'd probably be fine. But I don't know about Tara's.
Yeah.
And Lee, no offense, your sample size is too small, regardless.
Yeah.
Darn RIRB, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I did some research with a student and had to go through that process again. It didn't go any better.
All right.
Oh, and did you, I don't know if you both listened or not. Have you guys learned anything from the third webinar?
I did not have a chance to look at that.
I haven't had a chance.
Or listen to that.
I listened to it, I took notes, and now I'm looking at the notes and I have no idea what these notes mean.
Was there anything when you were listening that you're like, oh crap, we didn't do that? Or
he did talk a little bit about making sure that our assessment tools, like these are sort of some of the things that people do that get their articles not published. Looking at the our assessment tools and making sure that they're reliable or valid, and that didn't really apply to us, I didn't think, right?
I mean, we adapted ours from one that has been tested, at least.
Which one did we adapt that had been tested?
What was the name of it? I don't remember. Solo?
Oh, okay.
Well, that was our framework we used for...
Yeah, we didn't really have... I think they're talking like, you know, like an art... Like a test to... assess understanding.
Like our actual questions that we wrote, you mean?
Yeah, and that, but I don't think that really applies.
And there really wouldn't be anything out there like that.
Yeah, so, you know, if we're trying to show that, you know, students learned more at the end of our course based on something we implemented, you know, you do an assessment tool like Artist or something like that. And
yeah,
a lot of people write their own tests or write their own assessment tools. But they don't show any measurements like Cone's Alpha or anything like that of reliability or validity. And if you don't do Cone's Alpha, if you don't do any quantitative measures like that, you should at least have an external reviewer look at it. So I kind of wrote a little bit down about that, but I was pretty sure that really didn't apply to us. Let's see. He did mention the first and the last, if we're doing anything qualitative, he did mention the first and the last article in that issue of Surge where they were talking, that special article, where they were talking about qualitative research and how it applied to stat ed. And I'm pretty sure I looked at both of those. I will go back and just double check. But I'm pretty sure I looked at both of those, and I remember thinking those were both really good articles about the qualitative stuff. So I may just kind of go back and look at what I wrote and what we put in there. I know we kind of kept it very minimal. But he did say something about providing a framework for why we're doing the research that we're doing. did say something about paying attention to the author guidelines very carefully. He did say that the differences across institutions. He said there's not a lot of research out there about differences across institutions. That was like kind of, I thought that was sort of interesting. I know it doesn't necessarily apply to us right now. But in terms of research that's out there, that's one area of research that there's not a lot of, and I know I'm talking very generally, but how statistics education differs across institutions. And he said that of the articles that actually follow the author guidelines and go out for review, about 10 to 15% are accepted.
Wow.
Which, yeah, that scared the crap out of me.
That's what I found when I was going to tell my dean my acceptance rate to journals I'm applying to.
Yeah. So those are the big notes that I made while I was listening, but obviously he talked about a lot more. And I sent the PowerPoint out so you can kind of skim it. So.
Okay.
I think we're okay. I didn't think there was anything that jumped out at me that we were in big, big trouble.
Okay, I'll still go listen to it. I just haven't had time since it.
Yeah. And I mean, in all honesty, I was also trying to help the host, so, you know, there may have been something that I missed. And we were trying to get NKate done that day, too, so I was kind of very distracted. Not that I'm making excuses, but if I did miss something, I'm making excuses.
All right, Commando, we're coming up on noon here.
Yeah,
I have
students waiting for me.
So what all do we need to do? I mean, I have my list of tests I need to run, obviously.
Yeah.
But what else do we need to do?
Well, actually, based on something that Bob said, I do want to go back and just take one more glance at the literature review. He did say one of the things that they get rejected for is if somebody does not do an exhaustive literature review. So I just want to do kind of a look through Surge, look through JSA, make sure there's nothing that we've missed.
That would be great. And then, Jackie, once I get the results from you, I'll work on updating the discussion.
So you just want me to send you the results, and then you're going to do all the writing for me?
Sure.
Okay. I think you're a more eloquent writer than I am, so.
Don't give it to me. It'll be full of typos.
Maybe with me, too, but I expect we'll all read through it once, so we'll get the typos.
We had to upload, like, our NKate assessments, like, 5 times because I kept going back and looking at them and finding different typos and stuff that I had written. I was like, that looks perfect.
Are there any other tests we need to ask Tara to run?
The only other thing that I am thinking about is a test that would let us look across study type. Like, I wonder if we should try collapsing across study type first. I'm sorry. Yeah, I do mean study type, like sampling method. So I was trying to think about, is there a way to do that? Like, can we just compare? I don't know. I don't know if there's a way. That's the only other thing I was thinking about in this. So that might be something worth thinking about or even worth emailing Tara and asking her. Could we keep the row dimension but try and test the column dimension and see, can we collapse across sampling type? Because to some extent, that is the less interesting domain to us. Like, our theory was really more built on opinion. And so if we're going to be collapsing the data anyway, I'd rather collapse across study type first and then see if opinion has an effect, whereas it seems like right now what we're doing is the opposite. But I don't know if there's a way to do that.
And that primarily just for the Mac PC, because since we know we can collapse across the one already, I'll see that for the other two, right?
Well, that's what I was wondering, is could we, would it have made a difference which dimension we collapsed across first? You know, if we collapsed across study type, probably not, because if there's nothing there, there's nothing there. But I was going to say, if we collapsed across study type, would we see an effect?
I'm trying to relate this to, like, my ANOVA factorials. So, I mean, I think if there was any three-way interaction, it would have got picked up there.
Right. So
I don't think it would matter for which one you started with for the ones that you can collapse over. So if we found out there was no three-way interaction there, we're fine. But for the one where we know there is one, we're not sure how.
Right. If both of those things play a role or if only one of them is playing a role.
I will see if she can do that for the Mac PC one then.
Right. Okay. So we'll just look at it there. But. All right. I think we're good. Should we set another call for next week?
Sure.
Tara said she could next Friday at 10, but not in the afternoon, but she could not do the 30th. So how does next Friday at 10 even work for you all?
It works for me as of now.
Yeah, it works for me.
Works for me as well.
All right.
And her, I will try to get that done today. If not, hopefully at least by Monday. Is that going to be enough time for you?
Yeah, I think that will be enough time. I'm not sure I'll get any time to work on it today. Not sure about the weekend because I don't know what's going on there, but I should have some time. Certainly Wednesday is always a good day for me. So certainly as long as you get it to me before Wednesday, I'll have some time to look at it then.
Okay.
So. Okay. All right. Well, have a good weekend then, everyone.
Okay.
And I will talk to you all next week.
Okay.
All righty.
All right.
Sounds good.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.